Today is November 11th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing fantastic. And, you know, I'm doing so much better now that I can actually hear you.
Yeah, we've been having some technical difficulties this morning, partly because of what I think is some kind of conflict between M-Audio's FireWire 410 drivers, Leopard, and Skype.
You know, this is the price we pay for being on the bleeding edge so that our listeners and readers don't have to go through all this pain.
Yeah, that's true. And that said, at this point, 2 weeks after Leopard's released, or 3 weeks after Leopard's released, I don't think we should be on the bleeding edge when it comes to this stuff. I can't believe that M-Audio hasn't released Leopard drivers for their devices.
You know, that really is surprising.
Yeah, or at least for this particular device. I didn't check any of the other devices. And on top of that, of course, I think it's a bit ridiculous that M-Audio even requires drivers instead of tapping into Apple's Core Audio stuff.
Well, you know, Core Audio is already there. Why take the time and effort to reinvent the wheel?
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure there's a reason for it, but be that as it may. The end result, folks, is that I'm talking to you today on a different microphone than I normally use, so audio quality might not be quite up to what it should be. But then again, we had some complaints about volume levels last week, so this is probably maybe a step up.
Could be. I mean, you sound fine on my end. Not quite the same Brian I'm used to, but it's okay.
Thank you, buddy boy.
Yeah.
Well, we got a couple things to talk about before we get to the news. We've got the we should mention the hotel thing that we're doing with the Hotel Milano.
Right. Yeah. Everyone can get a discount, which is what, $5 below what IDG can get you for a discount.
Yep. It's basically our discount is cheaper than the discount you get going through IDG to book a room, and that's already a very good discount. You can get details in the show notes, but basically it's $154 a night.
And it's about a long block from Moscone West, so you're walking
long distance. Block and a half.
Yep, long block and a half. Good airport coverage inside the hotel. And
yep, comfortable rooms, and they all had desks. The king beds, the king rooms basically had desks.
Right, and it also gives you the added bonus of potentially running into us in the halls.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, that's actually a detriment, right?
I mean, we will be in a different hotel this year, wink, wink.
Yes, and I apologize if you run in ahead of time, if you have to run into Jeff, because, boy, he can just talk.
It's a dysfunction, sorry.
I kid, of course. We also have a new thing that we're talking about this week. We've got the Platinum and Super Pass contest for Macworld,
which I think is actually a really great thing. The contest, you give us your – or you fill out the form, and you can fill it out, what, once a week or once a day? I can't remember.
Yeah, you can enter basically once a day. You enter your full name, your email address at the Mac Observer, or again, we've got a link in the show notes. And we're giving away one pass each, a Platinum Pass and a Super Pass for Macworld. And why don't you tell them what the Platinum Pass gives them?
Platinum Pass, it's fantastic. You get a Series 1 Power Tools and Series 2 Power Tools Conference Pass, Mac IT Conference Pass, Users Conference Pass. You get to go to one of the market symposiums. You have access to the Mac Lab. Priority seating at the keynote presentation.
That's huge.
That's huge. That means you don't have to get in line at 3 in the morning. Let's see, what else? You get a 5 days worth of lunch. And let's see.
Which admittedly is a mixed blessing.
It's, you know, yeah.
I just 5 free lunches. Woohoo! That means you don't have to go anywhere for lunch during the show.
Right. And after the first day or so, you'll figure out when the long lines are going to be so you can eat at different times.
Yep.
let's see, Macworld.
Feature presentations.
Yeah, feature presentations.
Yep.
Birds of a Feather, box lunch, exhibit hall access, of course. I think that was everything.
Yeah, that is everything. And the Super Pass, we're giving away again one of each, is one Series 1 Power Tools Conference, the Mac IT Conference, Users Conference Pass, one market symposium of your choice. Again, you get the priority seating for the keynote, feature presentation access, 5 days of lunch, Birds of a Feather box lunch, and exhibit hall access. What's the difference between the two? It looks like
the Power Tools Conference.
The Platinum Pass, you get the Series 2 Power Tools Conference, and it looks like there's one other difference.
Oh, yeah, the Macworld CNE Encore Complete Downloads. You get that with Platinum Pass, not with Super Pass.
Yeah, exactly. Nonetheless, they're two great passes, and they actually cost a not insignificant amount of money. I don't have that cost in front of me, though. Do you?
No, I don't, but it's lots of money.
The price. Oh, wait. Platinum Pass is $18.95, and the Super Pass is $16.95. There we go.
Yeah, that's a significant chunk of change.
Yeah. And when I say $18.95, that's $1,895 and $1,695 for each of those. So there you go, folks. You have a chance to win it at the Mac Observer. All you have to do is enter your name and email address. You can enter it once a day. I recommend that you do it.
I think that's a great idea.
All right. I do, too. Let's move on to the news, eh?
We will. Apple's iPhone officially launched in Germany and the UK. O2 ramped up its staff to handle British iPhone sales. iPhone software update 1.1.2 is slowly making it out to customers, and Google is entering the cell phone market, but not in the way that most people expected. Nancy Heinen's stock option, legal hot water, isn't cooling down. Burst gets to take Apple to court over patent infringement claims, and Steve Jobs is named the second most influential person in the IT industry.
The iPhone officially launched in Germany and the UK. Speaking of Europe, that was on Friday, and Deutsche Telekom, the exclusive carrier of the iPhone in Germany, sold more than 10,000 iPhone contracts the first day. By the time the iPhone went on sale at midnight in Germany, hundreds of people were lined up in the rain in Cologne to be among the first in the country to buy the device. Interestingly enough, however, few in other cities like Frankfurt seemed to be all that interested. Like Cologne, customers in London lined up well in advance to get their hands on an iPhone 2. About 300 people were in line at Apple's London flagship store, the first some 26 hours in advance. Apple employees were cheering the customers, and the BBC called the scene, quote-unquote, mayhem. Or mayhem. Complete opening day sales figures for Germany and the UK aren't available yet, so be sure to check back at iPodObserver.com for updated information.
British mobile phone service O2 bulked up its workforce by 1,400 employees ahead of Friday's UK iPhone launch in an effort to keep up with anticipated customer demand. 700 of the new hires will work in customer service, and the remaining 700 will serve as additional staff in the company's retail stores. Now, of the 700 employees added to customer service, 200 will be dedicated just to iPhone-specific support. O2 post-pay customer service boss John McGuyan commented, quote, "It is very important to get the customer service experience right," end quote. The company is expecting to sell some 200,000 units by the end of the year, and according to CEO Matthew Key, has already ordered, quote-unquote, hundreds of thousands of iPhones from Apple.
Mr. Key's 200,000 figure, however, seems conservative to some analysts. Gartner analyst Carolina Milanese thinks that UK customers may buy somewhere between 350 and 400,000 iPhones during the holiday season. Mr. Key may also have dropped a hint about Apple's plans for iPhone updates. In response to concerns over the iPhone's reliance on slower 2.5G mobile networks in Europe, where 3G is actually the prevalent and fastest available technology, he said his company would offer a faster 3G version in the second half of 2008. As usual, Apple is maintaining its policy of not commenting on future products so that people don't wait until the second half of 2008 to buy an iPhone.
Apple delivered iPhone software update 1.1.2 2 on Friday, along with its UK and German product launches. The update adds several new languages to the device, fixes a security flaw in Mobile Safari involving specially crafted TIFF images, updates the modem's firmware, and includes several other bug fixes. iPhone users that have added additional applications through a jailbreak process will lose all of their extra programs, and the update also relocks the phone, preventing applications from being installed. It appears, however, that units that have been unlocked for use on alternate cell carrier networks are not being bricked. iPhone software update 1.1.2 is free and available through iTunes while your iPhone is connected to your computer, although as of Sunday afternoon, some users, including Brian and me, were reporting that the update was not yet appearing.
Indeed. Google finally put the G Phone rumors to rest on Monday with the unveiling of the Open Handset Alliance, as well as Android. Android is an operating system, middleware, and application set for mobile devices. Instead of focusing on a single device, Google is teaming with other companies to bring its technology to a wide range of devices. Partners include Motorola, Sprint, Nextel, LG Electronics, T-Mobile, Intel, Broadcom, and several others. Andy Rubin, Google Director of Mobile Platforms, commented, quote, "Android is more significant and ambitious than a single phone. In fact, though the joint efforts of the members of the Open Handset Alliance, we hope Android will be the foundation for many new phones and will create an entirely new mobile experience for users. With new applications and new capabilities, we can't imagine today," unquote. Even though Android could potentially be seen as a competitor to other cell phone products, Google won't be abandoning its current mobile device applications, and the company plans to continue developing along with those applications along with Android. Presumably, Google's open commitment to continuing development of those mobile applications outside of the Android project means that Apple, Research in Motion, and other smartphone developers can expect to see updates and new developments for their devices too. Developers interested in coding for Android can look for the SDK next week, but customers hoping to try out an Android-based cell phone will have to wait until 2008, because that's when the first Android-based phones will likely appear.
And former Apple General Counsel Nancy Heinen is still wrapped up in defending herself against SEC charges that she illegally backdated stock options, and it's no secret that there is nothing more dangerous than an attorney that has been backed into a corner. Another former Apple attorney and SEC witness against Ms. Heinen, Wendy Howell, is experiencing that firsthand because Ms. Heinen's attorneys are working to get their hands on her personal financial records. The move is an effort to discredit Ms. Howell and show that she was financially strapped when the option grant incidents were taking place and was willing to do anything to keep her job. Ms. Howell's attorneys have countered that it is Ms. Heinen who is being investigated, not Ms. Howell, and the financial records of Ms. Howell have no relevance in this case. If this is any indication, Ms. Heinen's legal battle is going to be ugly and long.
Apple has been hoping that its ongoing legal battle with Burst over iPod and iTunes-related patents was coming to an end, but it looks like that won't be happening anytime soon. Apple filed a motion earlier this year to dismiss the 36 patent violation claims Burst was pursuing, and on Thursday, the court threw out 14 of them. Burst plans to continue pursuing the remaining 22 claims and hopes to be in court sometime in early 2008. The company settled with Microsoft over similar claims last year. The deal netted the company a $60 million lump sum payment from Microsoft.
And wrapping up this week's news, the Computing Technology Industry Association named Apple CEO Steve Jobs one of the top most influential personalities over the last 25 years in the IT industry. Mr. Jobs took second place on the list behind Microsoft's Bill Gates. The list was comprised from a poll of IT industry professionals, and 73% of the 473 respondents named Mr. Jobs as the most influential, while 84% named Mr. Gates. PC maker Michael Dell came in third, and Linux creator Linus Torvalds took fourth place. Mr. Jobs is credited with revolutionizing the PC market first with the Apple II and then later with the Macintosh. He has also been seen as the driving force behind Apple's growth and innovative product line since his return to the company. Mr. Jobs and Apple's influence in the technology arena can be seen in competitor products too, ranging from operating system interfaces to media players and even industrial designs outside of the computer and electronic industries.
And it's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. And what's on your mind this week, Jeff?
You know, the G-Phone is on my mind this week.
G-Phone. Let's talk about the G-Phone, which is different than the G-Spot.
It is. It is very different from the G-Spot. Well, for most people.
For most people.
Right. And I think it's interesting that so many people assumed that when Google was working on a phone project, they were actually working on the phone. Turns out they were working on the software so other people can build phones.
Well, you know, they may have been working on the phone. Just because this is what they announced doesn't mean that this is the only thing they were working on. I mean, this could
be true.
What they decided to release, in part possibly because of the reaction to the rumors that had leaked a few weeks ago about the phone.
Yeah, that very well could be. And actually, if they release software now, even if they make their own phone later on, I think it's a really smart move because they have the potential to get their development platform out to a much broader audience than if they were limited just to whatever handset they make.
Well, yeah, that's true. I don't think that Google's in a position to try to do what Apple has done with the iPhone, which is to control the whole widget.
You know, I don't think Google really wants to do that anyhow.
No, I don't think so either. As a matter of fact, you know, because of the timing of this, because it's coming on the heels of the iPhone, I think a lot of people seem to be assuming that the iPhone is the target of this, and I don't think that's the case at all. I think that Microsoft's Windows Mobile platform is the target.
I have to agree with you on that. It would not surprise me at all if Google had Microsoft squarely in their sights when they were developing the entire Android project, and then to add in a whole consortium of companies to support the project. I think that was a really smart move.
Yeah, that's much more along the Microsoft model, except, of course, Microsoft model is to make money from licensing the operating system to any and all comers, whereas this is an open source project. So where do you think Google's going to make its money?
You know, that's a good question. And I'm guessing that they probably have something in place where their licensing partners or their deal partners are kicking in some funds to make all of this happen. And the reason
but how are they going to make any money off of it? That's fine to pay for develop.
You know, one step at a time. I figured that part out. Give me a few more days to figure the rest out.
Well, I don't have it figured out either. I mean, it's the assumption has long been on the G Phone that Google's plan was to try to make money by basically making a phone network or platform that was ad supported. In other words, you got to look at ads in order to actually use your phone, and that's because that's what Google does.
You know, it may be that they're planning on making money not by displaying ads on the phone, although that's possible. It might be that they're assuming they can generate revenue because many of the applications that they will be providing as part of this package will redirect back through Google services.
Sure. The applications themselves could be ad-supported.
Right.
Or just be simply Google services themselves. But, you know, with it being open source, that means that anyone who wants to take this technology and cut those ads out of the process would probably be able to, although the kinds of companies capable of actually developing cell phones using the technology aren't really going to be wanting to do that. So it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting also because Google's going to make the SDK or software developer kit available to anyone.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, I'm not sure where this is going to go. I don't know what the point is. I don't see where their revenue stream is going to be coming from. My guess is that in the end, it's probably going to, like I said, like we both said, compete mainly with Microsoft. And when I say compete, I mean that's really just taking a market share away from Microsoft. And we'll see who ends up making money.
Yeah, of course, time will tell.
Yep, and again, you know, coming back to the Apple thing, I don't think this is really going to matter a hill of beans for Apple. I think that the kinds of folks that Apple is making the iPhone for, people who are interested in the quality you get when one company controls the whole widget, or in this case, most of the whole widget, Whereas, you know, again with them, Google's gains will be Microsoft's losses, maybe Palm's losses, maybe even RIM's losses, Research in Motion. I don't really think it's going to be Apple's loss. I guess that's my point.
Yeah, you may very well be right. It looks to me like Google is trying to create something that people can look to as an alternative to the Windows Mobile platform.
Yeah, I think that you're right on the money.
So what do you think about Jobs getting ranked second as the 25 – or getting ranked second place in the IT industry's list? Wow, I can't talk today, can I?
That's okay. I understood what you meant. You're asking me what I think about Steve Jobs being the number two most influential IT person and Bill Gates being number one.
Thank you for translating from whatever language I was speaking. Wow.
I think that that's probably right, and this is why. Steve Jobs influences Microsoft, and Microsoft controls the rest of the world.
That's a really interesting perspective on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that Bill Gates has been chasing Steve Jobs for 30 years now. And I think that he has wanted to be considered the great visionary and technologist that Steve Jobs is. I think that he's looked up Steve Jobs all this time. And I think that it's been a pointless chase because he's never been able to translate that admiration and looking up to, or whatever else you want to call it, to actual execution. And, you know, Microsoft has been controlling the world of IT, but that's usually been a very, very negative influence. I mean, they've kept other companies out of, you know, all kinds of markets. They have put the kibosh on competing products through you know, market share, leveraging their market share in one industry to another. That Microsoft FUD factor has long kept a lot of companies from ever being able to get any kind of financing for anything, because, you know, basically some company announces that they're going to do something, Microsoft announces that they're going to do it, and most of the time they don't do it, but it dries up any opportunity for the original company to actually do anything.
You know, I've always looked at Apple as a proactive company and Microsoft as a reactive company. So you're right. Microsoft and Bill Gates need to have Apple and Steve Jobs so that they can do what they do, because they see what Apple does or another company, and then they react to that. And where a company like Apple is really good at being proactive, Microsoft is really, really good at being reactive, and it shows, because they have taken so much of the market share with their operating system.
Yep, that is the case. And I think that if you look just like, say, make it the last 5 years, make it since the second year of iPod's existence. During that time, I think it's fair to say that Steve Jobs has been more influential.
Oh, sure.
But if you look at if you look at 25 years, Bill Gates has definitely been more influential. I mean, you look at the harm that Microsoft has done to the world, to the world's economies, with all the viruses that we were seeing in the late 90s, and, you know, whole companies being brought down to their knees for hours, days, sometimes weeks at a time. All the lost productivity that has gone into supporting Microsoft products. We're talking about trillions of dollars of harm that the company has done to the world's markets by largely squashing all of its potential competition in the 80s and early 90s.
All right, just kind of on a side note, Several years ago, I was talking with a guy that has done some contracting with the U.S. military. And mm-hmm. at the time, Windows NT was out, and that was the operating system that the United States government was using to run all of their nuclear submarines. Mm-hmm. And the joke was, it's called Windows NT because the NT means needs towing, because every time they'd have a system crash on a submarine, they'd actually have to send a ship out to tug it back in or tow it back in,
yeah, sure.
So they could reboot the computers because they couldn't do it on the subs.
Well, that happened with a destroyer too.
That's just brilliant.
That made headlines all over the place in, I don't know, 99, 2000, something like that. And I mean, just Microsoft has done a lot to bring computing to the world. It's just that resulting product has been so bad that it, you know, a lot of the gains that have been made in the area of productivity, I think those gains could have been a lot higher if it had been if there had been a more competitive marketplace in the world of operating systems.
Right.
If, you know, OS2, for instance, had really been out there, or if there were other companies that controlled the whole widget like Apple, or if Apple hadn't been run so poorly during the late 80s and 90s.
Right, right. So
and you know, and Microsoft can largely blamed maybe isn't the right word, but I certainly think that they're at the root of a lot of that lack of competition because of their monopolistic and predatory business practices.
How about credited? They can be credited with that.
Credited, yeah. And of course, that's not really what these folks mean when they're talking about IT influence, but it's definitely what I think of.
You know, I have to wonder, considering I didn't get to read everything in the survey, did they say influence in general, or did they say positive influence only?
Because there wasn't any kind of qualitative.
Yeah. So when you look at it just as influence in general, yeah, you have Bill Gates, who apparently or really looks like he has had a much bigger influence. But Steve Jobs, without him being there, Bill Gates wouldn't have been able to hit that number one slot.
Maybe. You know, I think that what Steve Jobs and the people at Apple were doing in the late 70s and 80s really, really drove Bill Gates.
Right.
I mean, I think that they were just, you know, desperate to be as cool as and make as good stuff as Apple was doing. And I definitely think that propelled them in the late 80s and 90s. Maybe not as much today. I'm not really sure. But I've just long felt that Bill Gates has idolizes Steve Jobs to a certain extent.
You know, I remember back in the old days when Microsoft was making lots of products for Apple. And mm-hmm. I remember going out and finding a place that would sell me a CPM card to put in my Apple IIe. And it was a Microsoft-branded card. And
mm-hmm.
and it was an absolutely fantastic product. But you don't hear people say that a lot today. It's more like, well, this is what we have, and it's good, or I like it. But you don't hear people going, it's a fantastic product.
No, you don't. You don't, especially with Vista. I mean, no one, you know.
Huh.
I mean, you know, Vista's just been a catastrophe, but... But be that as it may, I think that the survey is largely accurate. If you look at that 25-year scope, I think that if you were again to narrow it to the last 5 years, I think that Steve Jobs has probably been the single most influential person in the world of IT.
Right.
I think that the IT world has been playing chase with Apple for the last 5 years, and I mean just like. I mean, the Apple is so in the driver's seat right now for just about anything in the world of technology.
Yeah, you know, Microsoft's reactionary stance to what Apple does, I think that really has spread out to so many other parts of the industry as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because now you have companies that, because Apple said, well, we don't need a floppy drive. Okay, now that's That's been going away from computers. Apple mm-hmm. said, oh, we need USB. All right, mm-hmm. now that's showing up on computers all the time. It's a standard now. And I think without Apple there to say this is the new standard, then companies like Dell would never have added USB to their computers. They never would have considered making a computer that doesn't have a floppy drive.
Let's be accurate in that there were PCs with USB ports before there were Macs with USB ports.
Right. But
what Apple did was put out the first computer that was USB only. That's what set everything in motion.
Right. So, you know, yes, there were computers out there that had USB, but until Apple did it with the iMac, it wasn't something that people were looking at as a mainstream thing.
Nope, not at all. I mean, you know, let's even look at something more fundamental. Let's look at Microsoft and the Zoom. Microsoft has always said that the way to do business properly is to make something and license it to any and all comers. That's what they do. And the world has largely said, yeah, that's right. This whole proprietary thing that companies like Apple do, that's the outdated way of doing things. That's the crappy way of doing things.
And yet never we mind have the Zune.
Yeah, and now we have the Zune. Microsoft tried to compete with iPod by licensing various Windows Media-based services to any and all comers, and no one wanted to buy them because they were all pieces of crap.
Right.
So Microsoft changed the way Microsoft has publicly said, various executives over the years have said again and again and again that the way to do things is to have open standards and to license stuff and blah, 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 blah. And when Microsoft couldn't make any headway in the world of digital media devices with their licensing technology, they stopped, they reversed course, they made their own proprietary all-in-one system where they controlled the whole widget. It's called Zune, and of course that's been a failure too.
Right, and the irony about the Zune is that Microsoft created it so they could take market share from Apple and the iPod. Mm-hmm. And instead, what they did was they took market share from the other MP3 makers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But that's a massive fundamental shift.
Oh yeah.
In Microsoft's business strategy. And it was all because of what Steve Jobs and Apple was doing. So again, I think that Apple's influence there is pretty darn strong.
I would have to agree. And you know, Microsoft, it's not just Zune. They've tried to do the same thing with the Xbox and now the Xbox mm-hmm. 360. And from the numbers that I have seen, it's not the market leader that Microsoft wants, and they're still not making money on the project.
They are in fact still not making money on that. As a matter of fact, the only thing they do make money on is Office and Windows. Everything else they do is pretty much a money loser.
You know, I have to wonder how many Microsoft shareholders are feeling good about supplementing these what Microsoft, I'm assuming, hopes become loss leader products, the Zune and the Xbox.
Well, you know, I think that the Xbox may eventually make money. They seem to be firmly entrenched. I think that there are a few people who will not consider the Xbox platform to be a competitor with the PlayStation, especially with Sony's missteps with the PS3.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny that Nintendo actually seems to be the big winner of this whole third generation war between the Wii and Xbox Live and or Xbox 360. What's it called?
Yeah, it's the new one's the Xbox 360.
Yeah, 360. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Xbox Live is a service, right. The online service, and then the PS3. So there you have it.
All right, so I'm going to go way off in left field for a second. Have mm-hmm. you played with a Wii?
You know, I have not. I've seen them at friends' houses, but I didn't actually play myself.
Holy crap. Go play Wii. It is incredible. It is, bar none, the coolest gaming platform I have seen ever.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. I'll check it out.
Cool.
All right. And I think I hear the request line coming.
I think I hear it, too. Well, last week we mentioned that NBC Universal CEO Jeff Zucker was blaming Apple for destroying the music business and preventing record labels from selling music at what he considered to be profitable rates. Apple Weekly Report listener Buttercup Boxer commented, Am I the only one that thinks the music business has been sick for a long time, like since it started? It seems like all we heard about in the 80s was those revelations of how the record companies had for years ripped off artists and manipulated the system. It seems like the independent industry that kicked up in the 90s was the beginning of the market correction and the advent of the internet and technology, and listeners completed this market correction. Now those limo-riding, champagne-drinking, power-hoarding execs are reluctant to let it all go, and they blame Apple for it. I, for one, am glad to be paying for less executive limos, and I'm sorry to see that Hollywood is the same way.
Well, I agree with most of that. And I guess, by the way, we heard the listener comment line coming up, not the request line.
Oh, you know, I think you're right.
Yeah, that's just nitpicking, though. I think the Buttercup Boxer is largely right on with his comments, with the exception of the fact that he said that listeners have completed this market correction. I think we've got a long way to go. The recording industry is probably at the beginning of the shakeup that has long needed to come.
You know, I'm going to have to agree with you on that. I think that we started to see the shakeup when a lot of consumers started to become disillusioned with the music that was coming out, the prices that they were having to pay, and mm-hmm. then they started looking to alternate music sources, which led to the advent of Napster.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have the next phase of that, which is products like the iTunes Store.
Mm-hmm.
And iPod. And so next we have to deal with the shakeout that's coming along now, which is people like Jeff Zucker blaming Apple for him not being able to sell music at the expensive rates that he wants.
Right, while bands like Radiohead bypass the record companies altogether and release their records direct to their fans.
Right. So
that's definitely a part of the shakeup too. But I, you know, one of the things the Buttercup Boxer said was now those limo riding, champagne drinking, power hoarding execs are reluctant to let it all go, and they blame Apple for it. I mean, that's absolutely the case.
Oh, right, and they're looking to Apple to be their scapegoat, when in fact they shouldn't be looking for a scapegoat. They should be actively pursuing ways to correct the problems that they're having in their industry.
Yeah, they need to find a new business model that works.
Right.
With in a market where their ability to affect and control distribution is no longer important like it was.
Right.
That's what they can't get past.
Right. And I think it's going to take a while before they really do. And I think
it's going to take a long time, and we're going to see more casualties along the way.
Oh, we're going to see lots of casualties.
I think that people like Zucker are going to be some of those casualties, to be honest.
I think that's very possible. And I think we're also going to see more radio heads along the way that totally buck the system and go it alone and can actually make something of the efforts that they're putting into their music.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Radiohead's in a unique position right now because they are so popular. They could really get away with doing something like this, whereas
we might even call Apple Radiohead the Apple of the music world.
I think that sounds brilliant. Let's call Radiohead the Apple of the music world.
And what I mean by that is that Radiohead's fans tend to be very, very fervent in their fandom.
Yes.
They tend to be, you know, really be keen on the band. So, yeah, they do have that sort of unique position. But, one of the interesting things about their little experiment, and to refresh you folks, we're talking about them releasing their album, and they allowed fans to name their own price.
Yeah, and that was really interesting. I was wondering what was going to happen, and the stats that I've seen thrown around online is like a third of the people that are downloading
half.
The album, half are paying for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are not paying for it.
Are not
paying
for it.
Well, sure, yeah. You can take the glass half full.
Yeah, I decided to think positive on this one. So half the people are paying for it, and I found that to be just amazing.
Yeah, that is. I'm actually surprised as many people have chosen not to pay for it. I mean, I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but the entitlement thing that so many people have, where they don't think they need to pay for things that other people create, drives me nuts.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate side effect of the whole technological revolution we're seeing in the music industry.
Well, that and the fact that parents today don't hold their kids accountable for anything.
You know, and that's probably like a completely different context machine, isn't it?
That probably is. So let's move on to the request line.
Okay.
And that sound is the request line. That's your opportunity to ask Jeff and me our thoughts about whatever's on your mind. This week, Alexander wrote in to ask us about Apple TV. Alex wrote, quote, "Dear Brian and Jeff, is the Apple TV dead? Apple hasn't released any new features in a long time, and I fear I have the modern equivalent of the Pippin on my entertainment stand." That's very, very, very clever, Alex, and I kind of understand that fear. You know, Apple has got this long history of announcing great products and then kind of blowing them off.
They do. And you know, one of the products that they did that with, it totally broke my heart, the Apple IIgs. That was such a fantastic machine.
Well, yeah, sure. And even more recently, I'm thinking of something like .Mac, which I think largely didn't get the kind of attention it should have.
Yes, yes. Now, with that said, my gut feeling is that Apple is not forsaking Apple TV, but that for now they're just kind of letting it move along quietly and slowly. And I think there's some surprises in line down the road.
You know, I have to agree with that. I think that Apple's biding its time with the Apple TV. I think that the company is going to release new services. I, for one, think that they will eventually have some kind of movie rental system through iTunes and Apple TV. That's a rumor that I've long felt has a grain of not even a grain of truth. I think it is the truth.
I think that's probably very likely. Now, one of the things that makes it so easy for Apple to ship a product like Apple TV and then just sit back and let it kind of go and do its thing and then later on surprise us, the software that it runs is stored on the hard drive. Just like the iPhone, you can update your software. You can do the same thing with the Apple TV. Mm-hmm. So it will be very easy for Apple to add in really cool features down the road without making the Apple TV units that are already in people's living rooms obsolete.
Right.
And we've seen a little bit of that already. They added in the YouTube features.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was just a software update.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think I really don't think that Apple is going to release DVR software, because to a certain extent, DVR software competes with iTunes.
Right.
And I don't really think Apple wants to be in that business, because they could have gotten to that business at any time. They could have bought TiVo at any time with the, you know, with the petty cash fund.
Right, right.
And they certainly could have and could still release some kind of DVR software and make the Apple TV a true set-top box. But I don't really think they're going to bother to do that. I don't think they want to have to work with Comcast and DirecTV and Time Warner and Billy Bob's cable service and, you know, all the other various cable and satellite delivery systems out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, they could do something like Miglia and Elgato do, where they use an online service like Titan TV.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. They could, but of course, you know, Apple doesn't have a great track record of working well with others.
That's true. I think that showed up on the report card a few times.
Yeah, I think so. You know, Apple could buy Miglia or Elgato.
They could, yeah.
But both of those companies already make great products, in my opinion.
And it wouldn't take much to have one of their products plug into the USB port on an Apple TV and enhance the product in that way.
Yeah, or of course, or just make changes, you know, do it directly through a software.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Update. I mean, I don't know how much functionality is in the physical devices. I know there is actually some functionality in the products that those companies release that actually have external boxes or dongles.
Right. Yeah, several of their of the products from both companies actually have the encoding hardware built in. So yeah. You don't have to worry about offloading that to your computer, which
right.
which I could see as a real bonus to a device like Apple TV.
Right.
But, you know, I'm leaning towards your camp on that one, which is Apple isn't going to make a move into the DVR market.
Yeah, I just don't think they will. I don't think they will. I think they're going to want to see iTunes be the hub for acquiring content, and I think that's really what Apple wants.
Yeah. Okay. Now this is never going to happen. What I'm about to say. So keep this in mind. This is never going to happen. But it would be incredibly, wonderfully funny if Apple built DVR software into the Apple TV that just worked with NBC.
That's fracking awesome, man. That is awesome, yeah. Or better yet, if they built in a BitTorrent client that only
that only downloaded NBC
that,
content.
Yeah, it only slurped NBC content. That that would be so funny. That would be just overwhelmingly hysterically funny, but of course that won't happen.
No, but you know, if they did, they'd release it at Macworld. It would be the Apple TV FU, and yeah, it would be a wonderful thing.
You know, I just had a wild thought. What if Apple worked with the networks to start delivering live TV through iTunes?
Okay, no.
I don't think that'll happen.
That would be kind of cool.
But that's something that they could do, and if they had DVR software built into that, oh no, they wouldn't have DVR software built into that because then they'd have to charge for it, and I don't think you
probably not. But even still, that would be a really cool thing to be able to buy your Apple TV, have your mm-hmm. iTunes account, and then to be able to select TV in real time and mm-hmm. watch it through the Apple TV instead of paying for your Dish TV or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a lot of bandwidth, so that means that Apple would have to charge money. Now, I don't see Apple doing that either. I know it was my idea, but I don't see them doing it.
Yeah, but you know, these are some great ideas. Maybe someone at Apple is listening and they're taking little notes
for the right 8-figure salary, I am available.
Excellent. Good to know.
All right. Well, so the long and the short of it, as we get ready to end the show, is that I don't think you have to worry about having the modern equivalent to the Pippin. Although, again, I do like that phraseology. I think that Apple will continue to add new features to that, and I think they're going to come through in the form of additional iTunes features.
I concur.
All right. That's it. So we must be correct.
We must be correct. I'm certain of it.
Take us out, Jeff.
Okay. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, and that's recorded for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Keep your feedbacks and comments coming. And thanks again.